This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Jonathan Schanzer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy to help me interpret headlines that are coming in from Israel constantly that point to the larger contest, not just Gaza and Rafah, the region and the globe sometimes, because major players, members of NATO, are getting involved in the conflict. And there will be no end until all of that is solved. However, Jonathan, a very good evening to you. The headline: Israeli tanks move deeper into Rafah. Israeli tanks move deeper into Rafah, Palestinians say, as 450,000 flee. I've learned from conversation with Seth Frantzman of the Jerusalem Post that the Hamas concentration in Rafah is part of the story, that there are Hamas killers popping up in Jabalia and Khan Yunis and Zeitun, north of Rafah. Is this focus on Rafah? Don't attack Rafah or else, some capitals say. Leave off Rafah out of this, take care of the injured and the civilians, some capitals say. Is the concentration on Rafah inaccurate? Are we looking at a Gaza-wide problem that continues? Good evening to you, Jonathan.
Good evening, John. I think, you know, what we need to do is differentiate between the tactical and strategic as far as the Israelis are concerned. Strategically, it's crucial for the Israelis to get a handle on Rafah. This is the southernmost town in the Gaza Strip. It's where the Israelis have pushed thousands of Hamas fighters. This is basically their backs up against the wall. And the Israelis do have an opportunity to strike at the core, what's left of the core of Hamas's organized military structure. And so there's somewhere between, let's say, 4,000 to 7,000 fighters in and around this area. They're swarming and they're ready for a battle. And the Israelis are readying for that battle as well. I believe that right now the Israelis are taking this battle incrementally. They've gone into eastern Rafah. They've gone along what's known as the Philadelphia Corridor, where there's not heavy concentrations of people or fighters for that matter. And so it's been safe up until now. But we're now watching an escalation where Israel has incrementally increased pressure and added additional personnel and tanks into the fight. And so we'll see how much pressure is put on Israel as they escalate. The big question, I think, for the Israelis is whether they're able to do this without humanitarian challenges, without the kind of disaster that the U.S. has been warning about. But then there's what's happening in the rest of Gaza, as you intimate, John, and that is that Hamas is finding its way back into the crevices of Gaza that the Israelis don't control, or at least are not actively trying to control. And so you see in places like Gaza City and Khan Yunis and Jabalia and Zeitun that you're going to see elements of Hamas return. I don't know if in the big picture, strategically, whether that's a major concern for Israel. These are fighters that can, I think, be easily dealt with. And I think this may be the reality of what is on the ground in Gaza for perhaps months ahead. But I do believe that Rafah is still the remaining strategic conquest that the Israelis need to focus on for two reasons. One, again, those fighters, those 4,000 to 7,000, perhaps even more of those that have been girding for battle and preparing for the moment that the Israelis take another step forward. And then there is the last part of this, which is the border area, which I believe is still crucial, that along that Sinai border with Gaza, the area known as the Philadelphia Corridor, which we've talked about multiple times here on your show, I believe that that is still the area through which weapons, cash, fighters, leaders, perhaps even injured fighters have been coming and going. And the Israelis need to shut that down. These are likely subterranean tunnels that need to be dealt with.
Here's the mystery. Maybe Erdogan helped us solve it. Within these last hours, the president of Turkey, who is a very powerful man, a neo-Ottomanist, adjunct fellow of the Muslim Brothers, a man who has offered sanctuary to Hamas, Mr. Erdogan has boasted that 1,000 Hamas fighters are in his hospitals in Turkey. So the mystery, how did they get there? Jonathan, is there one answer? One answer?
Yeah, I think it's Occam's razor, John. I mean, you know, I think the simplest answer is likely the one that we're going to fall upon here. I don't think the Israelis are allowing them to leave. I think they would rather have them in their own custody so that they could be interrogated, right? If these are Hamas fighters that have been injured on the battlefield in Gaza, the Israelis have been very eager to collect information from those that they're able to capture. And we know that they've gotten a huge amount of important intelligence from people that they've captured on the battlefield. So it's not likely that the Israelis are letting them go. It's not like that they're coming through Israeli territory in order to get to Egypt. It's not likely that they're escaping by way of sea, because the Israelis have that area cordoned off as well. So that leaves us with one border. Once again, all eyes on that border between Rafah and the Sinai Peninsula, that area known as the Philadelphia Corridor. I can't imagine there's any other way that these people are getting through. And so this is the, I mean, people were outraged yesterday when they heard that the, you know, the president of Turkey, a NATO ally, was, you know, helping Hamas wounded, you know, and people were outraged about that, that there were 1,000 fighters that he was bragging about that were being hospitalized in country in Turkey. But I have to say, my question, and I posed it on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days, the question is, how did they get there? That, to me, is a crucial question that needs to be answered, especially as the Israelis continue to operate in and around Rafah. I believe that, at least in part, the administration's opposition to Israel's fighting in Rafah may be less, or not only, to do with with the potential humanitarian concerns, which I think the Israelis have dealt with quite well so far. I believe that they also are concerned that the Israelis are going to see what we are, I think at this point, almost certain they're going to find. And then the question is, what happens to the Camp David Accords? What happens to the longest lasting peace agreement between an Arab state and Israel in the Middle East?
There's indication that Cairo is feeling the pressure. I noted that there was talk of Cairo joining with South Africa in taking a claim to the ICJ that Israel is a war criminal. Backing South Africa up. That could be one indication of Sisi pushing back. But Jonathan, you've talked about this for weeks, and it's becoming more and more normalized to speculate how Egypt could have not known about the tunnels being used for smuggling, what you call the highway of tunnels, the last time we talked about this. If Egypt did know, does that mean that we're looking at one great big bribery campaign, money from Qatar and other sources? That visit of Erdogan to Cairo, what was it, several weeks ago, was that to set up this rat line out of Hamas, out of Gaza to Turkey? Does that mean that many hands would have to know what's going on to get from Sinai to Turkey, shipping or air travel? How much do we know about Egypt's cooperation or even collusion with Hamas?
We don't know, John. I mean, and that's the thing, you know, we keep looking again, you know, by process of elimination, it becomes almost impossible to imagine any other scenario. If the Israelis are not letting Hamas out, then who is? And then there's only one actor that shares a border with Gaza, and that's Egypt. So, you know, we continue to arrive at this place. The Israelis have been unusually tight-lipped about this, and I can understand why. It's a very sensitive situation. But again, I've heard from multiple sources of mine in Israel that there is real concern. They don't have proof yet because they're not there, but they continue to hear from different sources that this is, in fact, what is happening below ground. We need to prove it. And then we need to have, I think, a better assessment of what the Egyptians plan to do to remedy this situation if they are, in fact, guilty of what we think they are.
Two items that don't go immediately to tactical, but certainly are profound. One, Michael Oren, the distinguished historian, former ambassador to the United States from Israel, mentioning that in the Washington Post, there was a report that the U.S. has information about the whereabouts of Yahya Sinwar and other leaders of Hamas, and has not conveyed that to Israel, or will convey that to Israel if a quid pro quo. Mr. Oren does not have a conclusion because it seems so contradictory that the U.S. would withhold information, vital information, that would be part of the war winning from Israel. Do you make sense of this, Jonathan?
I've seen the same reports that Michael has and others have commented on. If the reports are true and the U.S. is offering key intelligence about the whereabouts of some of Hamas's top leaders, Sinwar possibly included, but others as well, if they have been withholding that from the Israelis, there are profound implications here that the U.S. and Israel are not sharing intelligence fully, that the robust intelligence coordination that we've always thought existed, that perhaps it's been diminished since 10/7, that it's been diminished since perhaps some of the tensions that have surfaced in January, February, as our election season ramped up into full swing. It appears that the U.S. is not giving the Israelis everything they need in order to win. And now they're essentially trying to bribe the Israelis to not go into Rafah. Yet again, we're hearing the same thing in exchange for this information. That should be shocking to anyone that has been supportive of this robust intelligence cooperation. And by the way, it goes both ways. The Mossad provides the CIA with information that has prevented untold numbers of terrorist attacks, key information that they've been collecting. And so what does this mean for intelligence cooperation moving forward? I don't know.
And casualties. The UN is now declaring that the casualty numbers that the Hamas health ministry has been providing is false. That it's false to the scale of 50% false. And that's just the first report. It's a war. You can't do a head count in a war. However, that in itself is a significant number, 50% less for women, for children, and for all casualties, because they've been counting people who die by natural causes. They've been counting the death cycle as victims of the Israeli military action. The UN says 50%, and we have no reason to trust the UN. It could be even lower than that. Jonathan, this is one great big agitprop campaign. Who's running it? Who's behind this?
Well, I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that are behind this campaign. The UN has been either driving it or has been a willing participant. Hamas has been producing these numbers, the so-called Gaza Ministry of Health. They appear or they purport to be able to collect in real time the number of people killed during this campaign, how they could possibly do this when no other administration during a war has been able to kind of collect those numbers in real time. None of this makes a lot of sense, but yet we find that there are willing participants in this narrative to try to legitimize numbers being produced by a terrorist organization as it fights a U.S. ally and a democracy. And it is just shameful that our media continues to parrot these numbers. It's incredibly just bizarre that the White House has parroted these numbers as well, the Pentagon as well. It is just simply outrageous that that is what's been happening. I think this revision downward of the men and women, or the women and children, rather, that have been purportedly killed during this conflict, that downward revision may be the first crack in the facade. And I'd like to see more come out as more is learned about the way that that death count has been tabulated and the way in which they actually conduct themselves on the battlefield, this Gaza Ministry of Health.
War in the North, when we come back. Jonathan Shanzer, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.